Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina, and as always, I'm joined by my man Scott Chu. Scott, a little behind the scenes story here. This is take two of this week's episode, and we're doing a little breakdown of the fantasy baseball shortstop position, but take two.
Yeah, I mean, you're the real winner here, Joe, because you'll get to see how much better these takes are than the ones I just gave about 4 or 5 minutes ago. I think you're going to be really impressed with the growth I've made in the last 30 or 40 seconds to really make this. I mean, and that's what you got to do when you're an FSWA finalist for right. Best Baseball Podcast. That's the kind of growth that we talk about.
We're only getting better episode by episode, minute by minute. We've come a long way, and we still have a long way to go. But we'll get through it together. So just to give our listeners a reference point, we're recording this episode on Tuesday, February 15th. Scott, we spoke about this. Baseball still on hold due to the lockout. Universal DH, though, is a go. And so we had talked about how catchers like a JT Realmuto take a day off here and there, but you can keep their bats in the lineup. Veteran NL players who are injury prone may need a day off or so. You keep their bats in the lineup in the NL. So I love the Universal DH. I love offense. I don't know how you feel about the Universal DH.
Yeah, I mean, as much fun as it can be to root for a pitcher to get a hit, like they don't do it very often, famously. Right. I never really bought into the, oh, the strategy part's good. It's like, no, it's not. It's just like working around an out, right? It's just like having a bad number nine hitter. Except, you know, it's basically like having like Billy Hamilton, except they weren't going to run.
Right?
Like they weren't going to get on base and they weren't going to run. Like that's really exciting TV. Isn't it? These guys probably aren't going to get on base. And if they do, they're probably not going to do anything. Really exciting. So I'm happy about it. And I think the catcher example is a good one because that's really what you should expect from anyone who gets a lift from the DH. Not very many teams use a full-time DH. I mean, the Angels, the Royals did when they had Jorge Soler at times. But like the days of like the Billy Butler are gone. Where the full-time DH, those players don't really exist much anymore, right? There's Nelson Cruz, but he's sort of like the end of an era of the always a DH, right?
Even JD Martinez played some outfield last season.
Yeah. They find ways teams really value that kind of versatility. So that's what you're going to see. You take a guy who you thought was going to get like 2/3 of the at-bats and make it like 3/4, you know? Because now he's going to get a couple days to play DH. That's the change you should make. What you shouldn't be doing is like massive changes for anybody, because this is mostly just going to give platoon guys an extra couple of plate appearances a week.
Right. Okay. So let's dive right into the fantasy baseball shortstop position. You've got your rankings in, and we're not only going to talk about your rankings, but the strategy behind those rankings. And I really love the conversations we've had last week at doing the second base position. Prior to that, we broke down the first base position. If you missed those episodes, listen to them on demand, download them, because I think it's really worthwhile. But, Scott, I'm in the middle of a mock draft for the TGFBI League. We spoke about the TGFBI League last week. It's a 15-team league, and with a bunch of people from the pitcher list staff. And, you know, we keep on talking about how deep the shortstop position is, but, every fantasy position, no matter how deep it is, eventually it's not as deep anymore. And I found that out while doing this mock draft. I waited too long before I took my fantasy shortstop. And now the options left to me, Scott, Adalberto Mondesi, Dansby Swanson, Willie Adames, Brandon Crawford, Ahmed Rosario, Brendan Rodgers. I mean, nice players, but not the elite.
No, they're not the elite, and they're not close. That's the thing about shortstop. It is both deep and top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is this tier of players that go in the first, you know, first there's the guys that go in the first five picks. There's like three of them, right? With Tatis, Turner, and Bo Bichette. But then there's a bunch of guys that still go in like the top 50, 60 picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's everyone else in a sense, right? Like, yes, some are better than others, obviously, but what we're talking about is a bunch of guys with an outside shop to crack the top 12, right? Like there's, you know, every year we like to do a thing where it's like, oh yeah, take a guy who's being drafted outside the top 10 or 15 of the position and have him finish in the top five, right? Or the top three, right? Just at his position. And you can sort of do it at shortstop, but you also kind of can't, right? The only reason you can do it is because the 10th guy being taken at shortstop is still in like the top 50 picks.
Right.
So because they're so jam packed, you don't have to worry about it too much, but you know, at some point there's this big drop off, and we'll talk about it as it comes up, as we naturally go through the progressions, but you get to a point where the upside is just like starkly different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably, as we talk about it, I think, you know, just to tease a little here, once you start getting into tier three and four, right? Tiers three and four are still very, very good players. But like, that's where the guys that we talk about late, like, oh, they have upside. Like, what if they, you know, what if they break out? That's where they'll end up. Like tiers one and two are pretty much what they're going to be. And mm-hmm. if anything changes, it's guys going from tier, like the guys that are currently in like a tier three, like a Francisco Lindor or a Corey Seager or a Carlos Correa, who's in tier four, or Bobby Witt, taking a step and moving up into mm-hmm. tier like three or the back end of tier two. Right. But again, let's be clear. Like my tier two goes through like the top eight of the position, but that's still guys like Marcus Semien, Tim Anderson, and Trevor Story.
Right. Right.
Like that's the second tier, but like in any other position, that's like a first tier.
Right. So like you mentioned, your top tier, your top three, you mentioned Fernando Tatis, Trey Turner, Bo Bichette. And, you know, we spoke about this in our last episode last week. We kind of touched upon it, but you and I kind of have a difference in opinion in terms of Tatis. Now, for me, in a redraft league, I'm not taking him because of that chronic issue with his shoulder where it keeps on popping out of its socket, right? Now, you know, when he does play, he's awesome. He's incredible. But the issue with me is my first round pick, I can't take a chance at knowingly taking a player who has a pre-existing condition at the start of the season and has the opportunity where he might miss weeks. But when he comes back, of course, he's awesome. But I can't take the chance of him possibly missing weeks or him re-injuring that shoulder so bad that he's done for the season. And if he does need surgery, they're saying that it would be a 5-month recovery.
Yeah. And let's be clear about what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a guy who has missed a lot of time. It's a guy who could miss time because he didn't miss that much time. He had two like minimum IL stints for the shoulder and one for like COVID, but he still played like 130 games. And this is something he's been managing since he was in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a thing where it came out that he had aggravated it, and that is a serious thing, but it's not as though this is some new injury. It's the same injury he's been managing for most of his professional career, at least up here in the States. Mm-hmm. So that's for me why like I'm not as worried about it. I'd say the biggest thing that happens is if I have 1.1, it means I'm taking Fernando Tatis Jr. and I'm probably pushing like Max Muncy down my rankings a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have taken on some injury risk, but not enough to like make me pick someone else instead.
Right.
And for the folks in your position, Joe, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you because like they're all very good players, blah, blah, blah. I'd say the real question is, what if you're picking fourth? What if you're picking fifth? What if you're picking sixth? Who is the last player you would take ahead of Fernando Tatis Jr.? I think that's the question you really have to ask yourself. And I think for a lot of us, it's one guy, right? Like it's Trey Turner. Mm-hmm. It was Turner, Tatis. But that might be different for you. Not so much at shortstop, maybe. I mean, you could make the Bichet argument all about the injury risk. But what you're really looking at is a guy who is the best right now. I mean, he's just what he is. He's the best, especially when he plays, other than maybe Shohei Ohtani. And you're worried about future time. You're worried about something that could happen that hasn't happened yet. And not even
it happened a couple times last season. And like you said, they were surprisingly rather short stays. I think he only was on the IL once. And then I think he missed some other time with the shoulder injury, but I don't think he went on the IL for the shoulder more than once. But, and also you mentioned he had the COVID issue. It's just to take that kind of a risk with my first round pick, it's just me, my aversion to risk. Now, in a DFS league, if I could fit his salary in a DFS lineup, he's in there every day. Because like you said, when he does play, he's incredible. And I'm looking at how many different players have been taken first overall in NFBC leagues. And it's four, five, six different players have been taken number one overall in NFBC league. So you're right. You know, what do you do once you get to that fourth pick, right? I mean, because there are so many great options, you know, in the top six, seven picks.
There's six shortstops who have gone one or two in drafts, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Hitters, right? There's hitters. That's how many hitters go there. Like we have a ton, like it's really top heavy on the hitters. There's not like in years past where there's been the pitcher. Do you lead with the pitcher? You know, because DeGrom has health issues, you know, stuff with Gerrit Cole. That's gone now. Like the whole top half of the draft is hitting. Yes, Gerrit Cole's been taken as early as three, but his ADP is like 8.5 for drafts that have happened this month. So it's just not the same. It's going to be really heavy on hitting. It's going to be heavy on shortstops specifically, right? Because three of the top five players in ADP are shortstops. You can have those thought experiments. I think they're really important because those are weird picks to have. It's also a pretty good lesson that like there's no need to pick first this year. There's really not. Because Tatis has gone fourth. Like more than once, probably. Tatis, like, you know, Jose Ramirez has gone anywhere from 2 to 7. Juan Soto, 1 to 8. Right? Vlad Guerrero Jr., 2 to 10. Like that's a huge range of picks for players of that caliber. So if there's anything I learned sort of from the top of the shortstop, it's less of like how I'm attacking shortstop and more of like if I have KDS or get to pick my draft spot, I got no need to be over at number one. I love Tatis and like that's great if I get number one, but I think, you know, it's so much talent at the top. Yes, again, Turner and Tatis particularly and Ronald Acuna fully healthy have this tier that no one else can get to in Roto because of the steals, but in head to head, there's no need to pick before fifth, sixth, seventh. There's a really good player there, and the stolen bases don't matter as much in head to head category leagues.
No,
or points. Points, it's even messier. There's tons of players to take there, and you probably end up with Soto.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we take a look at the second tier, a lot of talent in this second tier there, Scott. You listed Xander Bogaerts as your fourth best shortstop, followed by Tim Anderson at 5, Trevor Story 6, Simeon 7, Wander Franco 8, and that rounds out tier 2. You went a little higher on Bogart's than other rankings. NFBC, for instance, they have him as seventh. What do you love about Bogarts?
Everything.
Yeah, except, what is there not to love, right?
Like he doesn't run that much. Like that's it, I guess. Like the power hasn't gone back to kind of what we saw in 2019 when he hit the 33 home runs, but played 144 games. He had another 23 home runs. I mean, a lot of projection systems like him for 25-ish.
Right.
He's going to hit for a real high batting average, right? Like last three seasons, 309, 300, 295.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ignore the fact that that's a downward trend because it's not really. You know, he's just really, really strong. Four straight seasons of a 130 WRC plus or better. He plays like every single day. This was actually, other than his debut year, he tied a 162 game season. His lowest number of games played was 140. It's 144, right? It's one of the lowest plate appearance totals he's had in his career because it was 603. Like it's the guy plays. He plays and plays and plays and plays and plays. He does steal some bases, and I think the thing about stolen bases this year, yes, it's always, you know, they're a rare commodity. Blah blah blah. Don't overlook the guys that chip in those 5 to 7 stolen bases.
Right.
Those stolen bases
they all add up.
5 to 7's a whole lot different than zero. How many leagues had real roto points decided? Multiple roto points decided by 5 to 7 stolen bases. They matter. It's not zero. So it's not like he has no speed. It's that he has only a little. Yeah. And when you look at like the fantasy relevant players, like 5 to 7 is pretty good. It's like average.
Yeah.
It's not, it's not a big negative.
Yeah. His ceiling, I'd say, is up to 10. You know, like you said,
we've seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
He stole 8 in the shortened season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but he did. So those are the things that, you know, you think about, but God, like if you look at ADP, this isn't a separate tier. There's not like two tiers here. There's one, but I feel like there's two, like the way I would do it. But if I was to like make this feel like the tier breaks in other positions, this would be like tier two and tier 2.5 that we're seeing with, you know, like tiers 2 and 3, as opposed to a proper, like, oh, the definitely a hard tier break. No one could ever convince me that these guys in tier 3 are, you know, shouldn't be taken before these guys in tier 2, because they could. I never will.
Right.
But someone could, a reasonable person might.
Well, every one of these guys in your tier 2, and I get what you're saying, you know, tier 2.5, they're very close. I get it. But every one of these guys could be your starting shortstop on your fantasy team. But let's talk for a minute about Trevor Story, who's a free agent. We don't know where he's going to go. You know, coming off a bit of a subpar season, in part due to injuries, and that could be just like, you know, wondering where he was going to end up. You know, sometimes some players, like, in their contract year, they just eat it up and they just, you know, perform. Others, it just gets in their head. What do you think about Trevor Story, and are you worried about where he lands in terms of what his production, how it's going to affect it?
Hopefully we saw enough of Nolan Arenado to know that you're not just your road stats when you leave Coors. There's been plenty of good work done on this. Mike Petriello over at MLB Network, I mean, he's done good work on this. Like, everybody, they've talked about it. There's a big challenge to playing in Coors because the ball moves differently every time you go home and road, right? And it's significant. It's not like a little bit. It's like balls move inches different based on the elevation, the same pitches. So it's hard to adjust. It's even hard to go back, because if you're, you know, if your muscle memory thinks that ball is going to be 2 inches lower and you swing at that, I mean, that's a pop out, or you might even miss, right? Depending on how badly you miss on the swing. So you gotta, you got to take that with a grain of salt. So like, don't fall into the trap of, oh, he's just his road stats. Like, I'm not that worried about Trevor's story. There's a reason I rank him where I did. It's because he's going to hit. He's going to run anywhere he goes. His bat plays everywhere. He has strong plate discipline. Like, there's nothing he can't do. Why wouldn't he? Right? Like, why wouldn't he succeed anywhere else? Well, his batting average will probably drop.
Well, it definitely I wouldn't expect, in my opinion. Yeah, yes.
And there's there are parks where his home run numbers could change a bit. And you can actually use StatCast to kind of figure that out, to see like what parks had like the biggest influence on his expected home run totals. But other than that, like, there's just not that much to worry about here. Like, at his talent level, like, he's just good. Right? Like, if I'm worried about Trevor Story, then I should be really worried about Marcus Semien. Because I know where he went, and it's not an environment that's conducive to hitting. He went to a pitcher-friendly park on a team that, you know, has those... Remember? I don't remember what year it was. You remember when the Marlins went and got, like... they went and got a shortstop, and they bought a team, bought a closer. They bought like a whole team and then sold it all at the deadline.
Well, after they won the World Series, right? They bought the team, they won the World Series, and then just broke the team apart.
No, they did it again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know they did it more than once. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, to me, there's like that feel in Texas of you're trying to buy a team and that like never works, except for like the Rams went and bought a quarterback and won a Super Bowl. But like that's going from Jared Goff to Matt Stafford, right? Mm-hmm. Trevor Story is leaving the best environment for hitting, but he's probably not going to the worst one. He's probably going to one that's in the middle, because most of them are.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried. I say all that, just say, I'm not worried about where he goes. It doesn't really matter unless something really squirrely happens where he's not hitting in the middle of the lineup. But what team is that? The All-Star team?
I mean, I'm with you. The guy is super talented, but I do think that his production will be affected slightly. I'm thinking maybe, you know, 25 to 30 home runs instead of the 30 plus that we're usually expecting from him. Yes, he's going to steal his share of bases, you know, could be 20. That's what we've come to expect from him. And the batting average, like, you know, 303 at home, 241 on the road for his career, you know, it's going to be affected, you know, maybe a 270, 275 this year, but still, a lot of production coming out of him, but you know, Kareem always rises to the top, and the guy's super talented, you know, five tool player. So you mentioned Marcus Semien. You know, we talked about him the second base episode that we did, in terms of Globe Life Field being a little bit more pitcher friendly. So, you know, I don't think he's going to hit 40 home runs this year.
Yeah, maybe not. Right. He's had a weird journey here at the end of his career. I'm still willing to rank Marcus Semien very well, obviously. Right. Like, you know, what's weird is he's actually the only player in my top, I think it's 19, that's over the age of 30.
Wow.
He's the only one. That's the state of the position right now. Like, my whole ranks, though, my whole top 30 has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players that are 30 or older. Marcus Semien, Eugenio Suarez, Chris Taylor, Brandon Crawford, and Gio Urshela. It's wild. It's a crazy young position. And of course, the youngest guy is the next one in my ranks, Wander Franco, at 21 years old. He is the youngest. He's younger than Bobby Witt. I believe he's younger than O'Neill Cruz. He's crazy young. That's like sort of one of the weird things about baseball versus football, that the players that come out aren't all the same age or even that close in age. You can be a rookie and still be a lot older, right? Because Jake Cronenworth was sort of a rookie and he's 28.
Yeah.
Wander Franco's 21. But
and as good as advertised, obviously, right? I mean, and he just got better as the season wore on, you know?
Yeah, he like struggled kind of in the beginning and then didn't want to struggle anymore.
Seven games, so batted 220 with a 283 OBP and a 349 slug. And then he finished the season in his final 43 games, 331, 388, 535, triple slash. Took his K rate, lowered it from 20.8 in those first 27 games to 6.4. So great contact rate. Just love it when someone is as good as advertised, right? Uber prospect.
The best to hit tool. Mm-hmm. Like Vlad Guerrero Jr. is the only other like 80 grade hit tool I've heard people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But like Wander Franco has it. That's why he's barely striking out. Like he's a monster. He's got the plate discipline and talent of like Juan Soto, except he is faster and he's a shortstop.
Right.
Right. And they're about the same age,
mm-hmm.
but, yeah, I mean, Wander Franco, I really want to draft him and I won't be able to because someone will always take him before me, but right. It's not because I don't like him,
mm-hmm.
but it's because somebody loves him. And you know, something I do when I look at a player, I go and look at their max pick. I don't ever say I'm out on a player unless I see their max pick and say, I wouldn't do that either. Right? Like I would take him later than every other draft that's happened in the NFBC. That's not the case with Wander Franco. It's just that I'm far enough in the back end, like probably around pick 60 or so, because the number of players in that range that I kind of like, that I'm never going to get him.
Mm.
But that's okay. But like I know that I want to. I just can't go higher than that. And I also know also that I'm not out on him. He's not just off my radar.
Right.
Because he has gone later than that. So it is important to me that folks like really think about those things. I mean, in the one draft I've been in NFBC, he actually went 32nd instead of his ADP of 56 or 57, right? He went 32nd. That's the way it moves around.
Yeah. In this mock that we're doing, it's a 15 teamer, but he went in the third round, the third pick in the third round. So that would be like a fifth round in a 12 teamer, right?
Yeah. Which is by eight. So like by ADP, Wander Franco is 10th at 56.93,
mm-hmm.
right? Where he went in years puts him all the way back to seventh. Cause that's mm-hmm. like around where Xander Bogaerts go. Like his ADP is 46. But again, the range is still big. The range. And especially in this particular tier, you see this big range because a bunch of these guys are very similar in terms of what the projections are going to be for that final number.
Mm-hmm.
Like their final dollar value will be very similar. And when you're in Yahoo's game, where there's only one shortstop and one second base spot and no middle infield that you have to fill, you're going to see a couple of these guys, I think, slip a lot later than they should and get towards those max picks. And if anything, I'm going to try to make sure I have some roster flexibility and that I don't jam up. I don't usually care about jamming up utilities early in the draft, but at least try to keep one open through my first 75 picks. Mm-hmm. Which shouldn't be difficult. That's only like 4 to 6 players. I shouldn't need to fill both utility spots in 4 to 6 players.
Right. All right. This next tier I find very interesting because it's got some players that, you know, we've all got questions about. I mean, it starts off with Javier Baez, ninth, going to be playing for your Tigers, followed by his buddy, Francisco Lindor, 10th. And then you have Corey Seager at 11th, and the tier is rounded off with Jorge Polanco as your 12th shortstop. So, Javier Baez, we know what he is, and I think we spoke about him in previous podcasts. Free swinger, good power, good speed, finished the season strong with the Mets last season. In his last 47 games with the Mets, put up a 299, 371, 515 triple slash. You had expressed some concerns about him playing in Detroit's Comerica Park, but obviously if you rank them ninth, you're not too concerned.
Yeah, like concerned is a strong word for that. I think that it could impact his home run numbers.
Okay.
Because it's a big ballpark,
mm-hmm.
right? But remember that Javi Baez in max exit velocity is 98th percentile. He still absolutely obliterates the baseball when he gets his bat on it. Just crushes it, right? Like, the batting average obviously could use a lot of work, but he's still a plus, like, he's still a plus defender. He's still fast. He still hits the ball really hard. So that's enough to get him ranked in sort of this range, right? And it's not as though StatCast, like, thinks he's a fraud. You know, they actually, StatCast supports a lot of the numbers he had that he had last season. And when he played, he was good. He stole bases. He hit for power. The batting average was bad, but it wasn't catastrophic. You know, the OBP was real bad because he doesn't walk. He just doesn't have any interest in it. And yes, he's striking out over 30% of the time now.
1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out.
But because he still has that plus bat speed, and because he still has plus foot speed, he was at 13.4% barrel rate. Yes, he's striking out a lot, but he's still doing good things with the bat. Mm-hmm. He can still be very, very productive, even with the bad plate discipline. And ultimately, plate discipline isn't a stat in most leagues.
Right.
OBP is to an extent, batting average is to an extent, but like, swinging strike rate isn't a stat in your league. And is it troubling that he has a high swinging strike rate? Yes. And for most players, that'd be a concern. But like, he's shown that this is the type of player that he is, and he can be successful that way.
Mm-hmm.
So let him be, and stop making him fit your little archetype of what a good player has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, eventually, yes, it'll fall apart. We know, yeah. Because eventually the body's going to lose that extra, 15th of a second that Baez has that the rest of us don't.
Right.
That he can make adjustments that the rest of us can't make. And eventually that'll go away, but it hasn't yet. In fact, he was as good as ever.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole fantasy baseball community for years now has been just waiting for those strikeouts to catch up to his production, but he's still putting up a decent batting average. Like I mentioned, really finished the season strong, batting .299 in his last 47 games for the Mets. And speaking of the Mets, his buddy Francisco Lindor, you rank him 10th. NFBC has him as the 8th shortstop going off the board. Fantasy Pros Consensus ADPs has him going as the 8th shortstop going off the board. Strikeout rate's gone up 3 straight seasons for him. WRC Plus down for 3 straight seasons. Power metrics are still there. He put up some big power numbers in September. Had a very, very, very slow start to last season. 288 batting average in his first 5 seasons, batted .240 over his last 2. Never great batting average against breaking stuff, but the bottom really fell out the last 2 seasons, batted .184 against breaking stuff. So
yeah. It's really weird too, because when I went to the rolling charts for Lindor, I expected a big, like a very visible thing. I expected this big like dip or something. It's not there. It's not there. It doesn't look like much. It just looks smaller, right? His highs aren't as high. I mean, his lows aren't as low either, but I don't know. Like, it's weird. If you look at it, it's almost like he's just been slowly refining the range of outcomes that he's capable of. And the problem is, it's not going in the direction I want it to go.
Right. Because when you say refined, I think positive, but they, unfortunately, it hasn't been positive.
Yeah. And, StatCast again suggests that he wasn't that far off from his like 2019 self.
Mm-hmm.
But he is still a little bit of a different player. The batting average isn't quite the same. He's not able to do that. And I don't think it's just because of this like mildly elevated strikeout rate, but I guess we'll see. At the end of the day, he's still, he's going to play every single day because he's fantastic defensively. And he's still, He's disappointing for fantasy, but again,
they gave him $300 million, they're not going to sit him.
Because he's been disappointing for what he's worth, but like he's still objectively a good major league shortstop,
mm-hmm.
right? A real good one. Yes. So it's not going to like you just temper your expectations and move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he can do better than he did last season because he can play.
And I think
more.
He will.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a firm believer that, I mentioned it before, the cream rises to the top. I mean, maybe he's not going to be a 290 hitter anymore, but it's probably not going to be a 220 hitter either. And he gives you the power, gives you stolen bases as well. Is he somebody that you would draft, you know, depending on if it makes sense for you in terms of his value? You know, if he's available and a draft, I mean, he's not on your do not draft list, is he?
Well, let's do that. Let's do that thought process live, right? Right now, live. His max.
We're going to do it live,
except it's a pre-recorded podcast. So it's not at all live right. for anybody except for you and me.
Right.
But
we're recording
selfish
this
that
February
way.
15th, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So drafts in February, he's never gone later than pick 27.
Mm-hmm.
His ADP is 48.41. So let me go see like what players are around pick 70 or so. Right. That's who I would be theoretically considering in the alternative. So in pick 70 or so, we're looking at Nolan Arenado, Lance Lynn, Logan Webb, Jose Altuve, Ryan Presley, Jorge Polanco, Corey Seager, Edwin Diaz, and I ranked him higher than Jorge Seager. Polanco or Corey Seager.
Yep.
So yes, I'm mm-hmm. still in.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the draft I was in, he went around pick like 50 something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably not in that range. But that's around where I've like, well, I might be in. It's around where I've ranked him. I tend to look at other positions at the same time. I rank Javi Baez ahead of Lindor, they're both generally going at like very, very similar times. I usually mm-hmm. end up with Baez instead.
Right. Cause you're a homer.
Yeah, I mean,
and he's a Tiger.
I mean, technically like Wander Franco's ADP is worse. Right. So mm-hmm. I rank Wander Franco ahead. So like, while I'm not technically out on Lindor, effectively I am because right. I rank players with higher ADPs ahead of him. Mm-hmm. So it's likely that he'll be gone before he'd be at the top of my list. But we've seen that there are realities where that doesn't happen. And I'm aware of them. I know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching my league mates' rosters. Don't forget mm-hmm. to do that, especially in Yahoo, where there's not very many hitters that they need to roster. Once they get that shortstop, they're very unlikely to take another shortstop only player, especially if they've already got one or two of their utilities,
mm-hmm.
right? They're going to keep focusing on positions of need. And if you're a little more open than that, if you're a little more, you're willing to play it a little looser than that, like you can see where those values come up. It's because everyone else is focusing just on position. And you're like, he's not the best shortstop on my roster, but He is the best hitter available.
Right.
I'll take him. He should be starting for somebody somewhere. And if it's in a utility spot for you, it's in a utility spot. I think he's going to be a value, or at least one of these guys. You know, I'm really wanting to leave drafts with someone in these first three tiers. I have a contingency if that doesn't happen, but I'd really prefer to have someone in the first two tiers, maybe the first, well, even the first three, because I'm okay with Javi or like, a Jorge Polanco.
Mm-hmm.
Tier four is okay too, but then I start getting nervous.
Right. Well, you end up tier three, like I said earlier, with Corey Seager and Jorge Polanco. Are you as concerned with the ballpark for Corey Seager as you are with Marcus Semien?
Corey Seager doesn't try to hit as many home runs as Semien does. Corey Seager is kind of more of just like a batting, like he does more batting average stuff and like spraying the ball around.
Yeah.
And that kind of play style. So I'm less concerned because it wasn't really a huge part of his game before anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like he can go to this other park and still display similar power that he showed in LA. Cause it's not like that's a super home run friendly ballpark either. So I think that it works. I'm not as concerned, but also like he doesn't have the same level of talent. So while I'm less concerned, I like still rank him behind for him because he's also just not as good.
Right. I think he'll hit for a higher average than Simeon, you know, fewer home runs, probably maxes out at 25, not going to steal. And also let's face it. I mean, health has been an issue for him over his career. Seager.
Yeah, it really has. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's older than you think because this is going to be his age 28 season, and that's not old, right? I'm older than that. But it's interesting just because it feels like he's still this like super young player.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's going to be in Texas a long time. That's a 10-year, $325 million deal.
Yeah.
Right. I think the projections are all pretty good, except again, it is weird to me that they keep projecting him to like set career highs in like most stats. Cause he just hasn't played that much, but he's played at a really high level for his last 147 games. 31 home runs. I mean, it's hard to argue with what he's been doing.
Right.
I guess I'm just not a believer in it as much, but hey, what do I know?
Yeah. Also, it doesn't help us fantasy wise, but had that huge playoffs when the Dodgers won the World Series a couple years back.
He's been an extreme example of really good when he plays, never plays.
Right. Yeah. So let's move over to the tier that you said kind of scares you a little bit. Tier 4 starts off with Carlos Correa at number 13, followed by Willie Adames at 14, Jazz Chisholm, which we spoke about last week, at 15, because he's second base eligible as well, and finishes off with Bobby Witt Jr., Uber prospect for the Royals at number 16. So what worries you about this tier or anyone in particular that is concerning to you?
Yeah, this tier is really weird because it really kind of calls out some of the stuff that matters in like the NFBC that won't matter to you in a Yahoo league or like a CBS league or an ESPN league. And it's things like Bobby Witt Jr. Like Bobby Witt Jr. is just way off my radar in Yahoo leagues and even like ESPN leagues because I just you don't need to hold it. The rosters aren't so deep that you need this guy. The hype is wild to me. Like, I do think he could be very good. I just don't see why there's any need for the Royals to like use him that much. It's assuming a lot of success. For again, a guy who probably isn't like he's going to play, but I just don't think he's going to play as much. But again, I get it, right? Bobby Witt is this like 2020 upside guy.
Yeah.
It's hard when
potential. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when Steamer comes out and gives you like 24 home runs and 18 stolen bases, it's hard, you know, not to be excited about the kid, but I also think that's really aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So that to
me
is like
the fact that when he got promoted to AAA, started last season in AA, batted 295, didn't really skip a beat when he got promoted to AAA, played 62 games in AAA, and still maintained a decent K rate at 22.5. So, yeah, but I'm with you. I mean, I guess we're not 100% sure that he's going to start the season in the major leagues. He probably will, tell you the truth, but I guess it depends what happens with this collective bargaining agreement and how that affects, you know, teams promoting their players early or not, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because I make it sound like I'm so out on Bobby Witt Jr., but there have been drafts that have happened where he goes at a place I'm comfortable, right? His min pick is 152. There are draft rooms that I'll be willing to take him. But for example, this particular draft that I was in, Bobby Witt Jr. went pick 75. By comparison, Jorge Polanco went 84 Carlos Correa went 111.
How many teams was this draft?
This is a 12-teamer, or this was a 12.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And so that's several rounds that you can wait. And that's a lot of upside that has to get cashed in to still be like a good pick there. And I just am not sure I see that happening. I'm not sure that he can be that, like, heck, even that consistent if he comes up. So I'll take one of the other risks, right? Like, the, you know, Carlos Correa is a risk for health, but he's obviously capable of being a big time player. And, you know, there's a lot of good places he could still end up.
Sure.
So
what's your guess, by the way? Where do you think he ends up?
Oh, I have no idea. Because
I'm thinking
my
he goes
heart,
back to the Astros, man.
I mean, it's a good fit. I was like, there's a part of me that still just like wants to go full evil overlords and just have Detroit get him too. And just like put Javi at second, make it work. Mm-hmm. Back when they actually have done, there's precedent when they lost Victor Martinez for the season way back in the early 2000s, they decided, oh, well, I guess we'll just go sign or we'll go acquire Prince Fielder then.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
Yeah.
So it worked out, but yeah,
he has a history with AJ Hinch, the Tigers manager, you know, so.
Yeah. So that's there. But I mean, when you get back to Bobby Witt again, good plate discipline. He's got all the stuff you want to see, right? He can strike out a little more than you'd like, which isn't great. You know, 22.5% in AAA isn't bad. That's going to probably look more like in the mid to upper 20% in the major leagues. I'm surprised that places like Zips project a lower strikeout rate in the majors than he had in AAA.
Yeah, that's being very
or double A, but I mean, that's cool. Like, I love the projection systems, but it's worth looking at those things, right? Like, is he really going to have a better strikeout? Like, do I really buy what Steamer's saying and that he'll have a lower strikeout rate than he had in double A and triple A? Because he's never seen breaking balls like this, right? He's never, I mean, that's an adjustment. Can he make it immediately? Absolutely. Sure, he could. But like, that's not something I like to bet on in a 12 team league. Yeah. I mean, he can't be my first shortstop, like my first shortstop eligible player.
No, I agree with you.
That's the thing he can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, when I say I'm starting to get nervous, it's because there's guys, we're now getting to a tier where there's guys where I say that cannot be the first shortstop I take.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Witt Jr. is one of those shortstops. He cannot be the first shortstop I take, which is funny because there are players taken after him that I'm okay with if that ends up being my shortstop.
Right.
Which sounds counterintuitive because I rank Bobby Witt higher, but that's because that's a very specific scenario where I don't have a shortstop. I can't spend the earlier pick on a Bobby Witt Jr. because I need some stability. Right? Like, I can't rely on a guy who I have no idea if he's going to play.
Yeah, but also, let's face it. I mean, you could be have as great a pedigree as Witt has, and we've seen players with as much talent as him get sent down to the minors after a month in the majors, right? And then, I mean, you know.
He didn't get sent down, but, like, Vlad Guerrero Jr., this wasn't, you know, 2021 was not his rookie year.
Right.
Right. Like, it's that kind of thing. So again, Bobby Witt Jr., I'd rather wait 30 picks and get to the next tier and look at a guy that I really like Willy Adames, who did a lot of really good things in Milwaukee. I like that park. He was not hitting well in the Trop, which is like the worst.
Said he couldn't see the ball. Yeah.
It's like the worst ballpark I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. And he was terrible there. He was very good in Wisconsin. And while I don't think he has a realistic shot at cracking the top 10, unless a lot of weird things happen, he could definitely, like, why can't Willy Adames be as good as Jorge Polanco? He kind of was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
like after he went to the Brewers, he kind of was that good.
Yeah.
So, like, why not? Yeah. He could. Again,
he was batting 197 until the trade. He had a 35.9% K rate. Then from May 22nd on, cut that K rate down to 25.4 and batted 285. So, yeah.
May 22nd, I'm guessing that's the date he was traded?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just, again, worth noting that, like, from that time, he played really, really well. Mm-hmm. From that time that he went over, he was excellent. And why can't he be as good as some of those guys? Like, no, he won't run like those guys run, but he could very well put up the same kind of offensive numbers as other top 10-ish guys, right? Mm-hmm. We actually saw this. If you look at last season from May 22nd on, you look at weighted runs created plus, where's Willy Adames? He's fifth, right? He's ahead of Bo Bichette. Mm-hmm. He has 135. He's behind Tatis, Correa, Turner, and Brandon Crawford. But Adames had 20 home runs in that stretch. Like, I think that's the third most among shortstops during that time. He was just a completely different player. Hit 285. Everything's different. I'm all about that. As opposed to a guy who, like, in the same time span had similar, like, power speed numbers, which is Dansby Swanson, but hit for 30 less points of batting average. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And before we move on, just want to mention, since we mentioned the Astros, keep an eye out for Jeremy Pena, a power speed guy who's probably going to be the starting shortstop if Correa doesn't come back to the Astros. So just keep him on your watch list.
Yeah, he's going to be a guy this happens every year. There's this player that's like, look, he's a guy that's a sleeper for me because he looks like he's going to play. Mm-hmm. And like, honestly, if you want to look at, don't make this a comp. This is not a comp. Even though Jeremy Pena, I believe, is like their number one prospect right now. But anyway, this is not a comp. This is not a comp. This is not a comp. This is not a comp.
It's not a comp.
But this is not a comp. But this is very much a situation like we saw Jonathan India come out of last year. Mm. A situation where if they don't re-sign Correa, Pena's going to play. Yes, there's other guys that could step in. Maybe, well, Aledmys Diaz could play short. Like, Bregman could move to short in a pinch so that, you know, maybe Taylor Jones or Aledmys Diaz can go play in the corner infield or something, right? There's a couple moving parts. I think this team is going to make some moves still. I'm not certain that they really count on Chaz McCormick coming into the season and being their starting center fielder. I just don't know exactly how that would work, but anything's possible. But yeah. Jeremy Pena is a guy who, again, you should think about, not because, again, he's some sleeper you got to have. It's just, if he has that job and no one comes in to take it from him, he can do something with it. Mm-hmm. Right. He can be a 15 to 20 home run guy with 10 stolen bases.
Definitely.
And that's something. That's not nothing. Now, in a 12 teamer, it's kind of nothing, but it's not entirely nothing for a guy who, God, where is he even being drafted? His min pick is 297, so not drafted.
Right.
In a Yahoo league, he's not drafted.
But if you're in a league where you're drafting 30 rounds, want to make him one of your last picks, take a chance. Especially if it looks like you mentioned, that he's going to be the starting guy there, or at least
it's a great draft and hold pick.
Yeah.
It's a great pick for, you know, really deep rosters like the, deep dynasties and stuff like that. I think it's a great player to be aware of so that you can be that half step ahead when they're all watching Jed Lowry be hot in April for no reason again for the bazillionth time. Right. You'll be like, oh yeah, I did look into Jeremy Pena a little bit and he had a good spring.
Yeah.
And it, you know, something to keep watching, and you're not wasting your time with the noise of here we go again, Jed Lowry.
Right.
Or, you know, some very random play like a Harold Castro goes on a hot streak for 2 weeks. Like, who cares? I mean, Harold Castro cares. His family cares. The Detroit Tigers.
His mom is very proud of him.
As a fan, of the Tigers, I care. But for fantasy purposes, I don't.
Right.
I want to focus my attention on guys who could make an impact. Right. And Jeremy Pena is a guy who could be very relevant as an injury replacement sort of player, or like a middle infielder in like that ESPN or NFBC style league, even if it's only 12 teams. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity there. That's what I'm looking at Pena for. He's going to be on my watch list like immediately.
Yeah. 291, 371, 444, triple slash in three minor league seasons.
Yeah. Who's a guy that could do something good that I could add for $0 to $1? It's a very short list. Jeremy Pena looks like the whole list currently.
Right, right. Well, there's another guy I'll mention later that I'm kind of interested in. But let's take a quick break right here. And when we come back, we'll discuss some of the shortstops who are part of Scott's fifth and sixth tiers. And like maybe we'll mention that sleeper that I mentioned before. But we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back, Joe Galina and Scott Chu, breaking down the fantasy baseball shortstop position. We're up to tier five. Interesting tier. A lot of, in my opinion, a lot of middle infield potential here. You know, if you play in a league where you're starting a middle infielder, this tier starts off with Jake Cronenworth, number 17. Number 18, Dansby Swanson. Number 19, Brendan Rodgers. Number 20, your guy, Eugenio Suarez, right? 21, Chris Taylor. 22, Luis Urias. 23, some guy that's getting some buzz, O'Neill Cruz, prospect for the Pirates. 24, Gleyber Torres, who's going to be playing a second base for the Yankees, but shortstop eligible. And 25th, you know, when I started looking at Ahmed Rosario's numbers, I was surprised at how good a season he actually had. 26, we talk about Brandon Crawford having basically a career year at 34 years old. And that rounds out the fifth tier. Interesting tier, man.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Right? Because now it's just guys. In a 12-team context, we're starting to get to the point where, you know, I probably could have split this tier in half around Chris Taylor if I really wanted to. But at some point, I kind of get to the point in a Yahoo 12 teamer where if you go to the rankings and you see the assumptions we're making, it's the Yahoo standard 12 teamer. In that format, there's, you know, do I really like, yeah, Chris Taylor's safe, but he's also fringy in terms of like being a super useful player in that particular format. So I don't mind swinging for the fences on a guy like O'Neill Cruz or Gleyber Torres, mm-hmm. right? There's a reason Jonathan VR sneaks into the back of these rankings. And it's because if he goes and finds a starting job, he can go back to stealing bases and hitting for power again, right? Everything else is a wild variable, but he could do something.
Right.
And that's meaningful. That could be valuable to somebody in a league. He could be added in a 12-teamer. He could be relevant in a 12-teamer. But, you know, we're very quickly getting to the point where the paths to being a viable 12-team starter are slimmer and slimmer and slimmer. to the point where a lot of these guys can only really attain that for a couple weeks to a couple months at a time. But my guy out of it is Suarez, of all things. And I know it's just me. The strikeout rates aren't always good, but he's still going to hit in the middle of a lineup that's still pretty good. He's still going to be in, you know, one of baseball's best home run hitting environments. Really the best one outside of Colorado. Certainly the best in the Midwest. And, you know, I like all those things about Eugenio Suarez. Yeah. And he's corner and middle field eligible in those deeper leagues. And again, he just has, you know, is it other than Fernando, like take Fernando Tatis Jr. like sort of out of the equation. How surprised would you be to hear that Eugenio Suarez led shortstop eligible players in home runs?
I would not be surprised.
Other than Fernando Tatis.
Very possible. 40 home runs is always a possibility for Mr. Suarez. Had a bit September. 370 batting average, 8 home runs, 13 RBI. Was terrible.
What are the three things I got right last year? What are the three things?
Yes.
I said, watch out because he's heating up. And then he heated up. Mm-hmm. It was great. It made it look like I know something about baseball. And I don't. But for a second, there was like this illusion that I did. And that was important.
Don't sell yourself short.
Well, I mean, that's all I do. It's very on brand. And that's okay. But again, you know, I'm looking at, for example, right now, the Bad X projections for second base and or for shortstop. And again, you sort of see some of the same things we saw before, except, wow, the Bad X is really low on Bo Bichette. But otherwise, it's like we're getting to that point where the dollar values like just sort of drop off. If you look at the Bad X or even, you know, ATC, all of them, you look at the dollars and you see it's like, oh, it's in the teens. Okay, now we transition to like 13, 13, 12, 11, 11, 10, 9, 9, 8, 4, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1, 0, negative 3, negative. Like, so we've already, this is the point. There's a breaking point in here where players have really like a ton of volatility, either with playing time or performance or both. And we just have to group them all together. Suarez is different than those guys though, because he could actually lead this position in a stat. He's really good. I believe the Bad X projects him to finish second among shortstop eligible players in home runs. Like it's Tatis and then Suarez and Simeon. And then who else leads this position in home runs? It's Tatis. And then if it's not Tatis, it's got to be like Suarez or Semien. Maybe Trevor Story, depending on where he goes. So, I mean, that's really where everything to me comes together.
No.
That's why I like him as that last ditch sort of thing.
But you're not saying you would, you know, consider him as your starting shortstop.
Yeah. No,
no,
not in a 12 teamer. God, no.
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page here.
No.
Is there anyone here in this tier that, let's say, if you're in a situation like I mentioned in my mock, where, hey, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I forgot to take my shortstop. Anyone in this tier? I mean, you know, look, I look at Jake Cronenworth, and you know, the guy had a couple of seasons in the minor leagues where he stole 20 stolen bases. Now he's going to be playing for Bob Melvin, former manager for the A's, right? Maybe he has a 10 stolen base season in him. Maybe, you know, Bob Melvin, famous for letting guys like Starling Marte run like crazy, right? You know, Cronenworth, maybe a 275, 20, you know, 23, maybe 25 home run season.
I mean, maybe, right? He's not like particularly fast. So I'd be surprised if he ran that much, but he could.
He had a couple of 20 stolen base seasons in the minor leagues, but that doesn't always mean that you're fast, right? I guess.
Right. Running in the minors is, you know, stealing candy from a baby if you really want it to be. So like his sprint speed actually is a lot better than I thought it was. Cronenworth's a little quicker than I gave him credit for. I know this because they keep saying it on The Athletic, but the most important correlation between stolen bases is actually not sprint speed. It's speed to first. And mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure how to get that right this second, but yeah, like more stolen bases would be cool, I guess. His value. Look,
if he's a 20, 25 homer, 10 stolen base guy with a 275, 280 average, you know,
I mean,
not bad. Still, you know, for this late in the draft, for where he's going in drafts.
Yeah. I mean, right now, though, he has a total of 7 stolen bases and 835 plate appearances. Hmm. So, like, we're asking him to change a lot. I think that this tier isn't the same as the tier that exists in reality when you look at ADP. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the react, like, so, and that's how I like to do this. I like to look at my ranks and then I like to look at the ADP to tell me, like, I don't have to answer the question necessarily based on my ranks. I have to answer the questions based on the ADP. The ADP mm-hmm. is more likely to tell me the probability of this player. Like, it's like it's sort of a way, like the way I think about it is the probability that this player goes, like, is the next player taken. Most of the time, it goes Adamas, Chris Taylor, Torres, Urias, Rodgers. Like, Adamas is after these guys, and I like him better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I would definitely want Willie Adamas there. So, like, I don't really worry about Jake Cronenworth because I'd rather have Adamas.
Right.
I don't really worry about Dansby Swanson because I'd rather have Adamas. And ADP suggests I'll be able to do that.
Right. O'Neill Cruz, you have him ahead of Gleyber Torres. And I'm looking at Cruz, 242 ADP and Fantasy Pros consensus rankings, 224 in an NFBC. And Gleyber Torres has a 149 in Fantasy Pros and a 150 in NFBC. Now, I'm not going to, you know, I'm a Yankee fan and I'm not going to defend Gleyber Torres or whatnot, but pretty ambitious on your part, though, to rank O'Neill Cruz ahead of Torres since O'Neill Cruz has, played 2 games in the bigs. Had that one hit where everybody talked about 118.2 exit velocity, don't get me wrong, and has a good power-speed combination. But I guess it just shows how far Gleyber Torres has fallen.
You know what gets my attention? When Steamer and Zips both project 100, you know, Steamer says 112 games, Zips says 83. And they project somewhere between 17 to 21 home runs and 14 to 15 stolen bases and a batting average between 270 and 280.
Yeah, very impressive.
Do I think that's what's going to happen? I don't know. Probably mm-hmm. not. That seems really aggressive, especially when the bat is so much more negative mm-hmm. than those. It's really interesting to see two projection systems take such different approaches. And it's sort of why, like, you see ATC in the middle, because ATC is more of an aggregate than it is a projection. It, like, takes all the other projections and aggregates them together. Ariel mm-hmm. Cohen does it. He does a really nice job with it.
Yeah, no, great job, but, definitely.
But again, like, in a 12-team league, I'll take this chance probably before I take the boring chance on Gleyber Torres. Because mm-hmm. O'Neill Cruz could really give me something that I can't really find in the draft at this stage, and Torres doesn't. Right? Like, realistically, I mean, Torres could be like a 2010 guy, like a 20 home run, 10 stolen base guy with okay counting numbers and turn into, like, I mean, where's his ceiling? It's certainly, I mean, I guess it's what we saw a few years ago, but God, that feels like 2019 looks like the outlier, doesn't it?
Definitely. Yes.
It looks like the one mm-hmm. that doesn't fit.
Yeah. One of these things is not like the others. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it doesn't fit. And I mean, I think that the projections on here are actually pretty good for what to expect from him, which is fine, but it's also like a top 20, like, it's a barely top 20.
Yeah, I think that upside. These projections for Torres are a little bit too ambitious. I mean,
yeah, they're,
I mean, you know,
they're aggressive and they're still like he's like a fringy top 20 shortstop because of how deep that position is.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he does all those things, he's still fringy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me see. Like, Steamer is the one that likes him the best. Like, they're the ones that believe in him the most. And even they don't put him in as a starter
right.
at shortstop. They have him at 14th. He just misses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know who they have right behind him? O'Neill Cruz.
Ironic.
And then Javi Baez. That tells mm-hmm. you a lot about how the shortstop position works right now. It's that deep that, like, they could put a guy I have in, like, tier 3 and they rank him 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even that crazy. That's just the crazy depth. And also meaning that, like, it's also sort of top heavy that way, because there ain't no way that some of these guys like D.D. Gregorius, there's no way he outperforms those guys if they play the same number of games. It just doesn't happen. So that's why, like, all of a sudden you're going to realize at shortstop, you're like out of options. And that's why Eugenio Suarez is that last one for me to take.
Yeah.
That last one where I can be like, all right, this feels fine. You know, not as my starter necessarily, but like, you know what? I can do, you know, this is fine. If this is my backup for third, and, you know, if this is my backup slash corner and middle infielder, who's, you know, he's always going to be in one of those two spots, this is good.
Hmm.
And he can be a shortstop replacement in a pinch, or a third base replacement in a pinch, because third base is short, like, it's just shallow by comparison. It's right. It's also weirdly constructed. So I like that he plays both positions, and he's one of very, very few players to have both. In fact, I think it's just like he and Urshela and Urias have, in my ranks, I think, that have that third base eligibility, which is so important because of how weird that position is.
Hey, you mentioned Didi. He's not on your top 30, and he shouldn't be. But since you mentioned him, he's the guy that I think is kind of teeter-tottering on losing his job. Philly's made no bones about it that, you know, they really like Bryson Stott. And I like him too. 475 ADP when I looked in NFBC leagues. Another guy almost like Pena, but we're not sure that Stott's going to have as much playing time to start the season as Jeremy Pena that we spoke about earlier. But this guy, Bryson Stott, very good hit tool in two minor league seasons, batting .298 with a .390 OBP and a .488 slug. Power with some speed combination too, but you know, you got to like him if he does eventually get an everyday job hitting in a nice hitter's ballpark in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's not bad. One of the things I like to do when you get down to this part of the position is that you're no longer drafting for a shortstop, right? You're often draft. I mean, you might be, but what's more likely is that you're drafting for a stat or two, or playing time. So when I look at like the bottom of these ranks, I look for a guy who's down there that I'm like, oh, I could really use the stats this guy has. I should target this as a sort of last pick kind of player, right? Like Andrés Giménez, if he finds a full-time job, he can definitely go double-digit home runs and, like, you know, 20 stolen bases. The batting average won't be great and the slugging won't be great, but he could definitely do it.
Right.
Like, so that's someone I look at. I actually look at someone who was talked about on our show when she came on, Taylor Walls. So I don't think he can put up a good batting average, but he does have speed. He could run. The Rays certainly aren't above playing some weird form of small ball, because they're willing to do some weird form of just about anything. Right. So they did option him to AAA like around the end of the season, but he hit really well throughout the minors, putting, you know, weighted runs created plus is just always good. In AAA, he had 222 plate appearances and an 18% walk rate. Like, he was just walking like crazy. It's just, there's no power, but there is speed. And I'll take that, because in a world where he somehow carves, you know, due to injuries and all these other things, if he carves out 120 games, he could steal 20 bases. And that's valuable in deep leagues. I don't think he's at all on the 12 team radar, other than as like a 1 week streamer for steals or something weird. But, you know, when you're shooting for like the home run sort of ticket at shortstop, I think that you really have to be targeting like earlier guys. Like, you have to be looking at an O'Neill Cruz to make that big impact, because that name that's like somewhere, you know, there's not a name outside the top, heck, even outside the top, like, see, outside the top 20, I'm not sure there's a name outside the top 15 that I would say has a real shot at the top five next year. So you can't play that game. Like, who outside the top 15 could finish in the top five of the position? Like, none. I really don't think maybe Correa, who is 15th, Like maybe Adames if he somehow stays the Brewers version permanently. But like that's a lot of good things have to happen for that. And so I just don't see it.
And just to give a credit, when you mentioned Taylor Walls, it was when Shelley V came on our podcast.
Yeah, so, yeah. There was a reason he was, because he was the shortstop that came up when we thought it was going to be Wander Franco.
Yeah,
it was worth paying attention to. He's strong defensively, but his bat just isn't really there. His batting average is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But you know he does field the position quite well, and he's got an okay hit tool. Not like the strikeouts were still too high. I think he can adjust on the breaking balls, but there's a good player in there. We just have to see if the Rays can get it out, or even if they care to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the weird thing about the Rays. They might not care. They might be like, you could be better, but we don't need you to be.
Mm-hmm.
We just need you to do the thing we ask.
Weren't they giving him time in the outfield too? Obviously, because or am I thinking of Vidal Bruján?
Oh, Bruján, like he'll play in the outfield.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if. Yeah, no. So Walls played some second, but mm-hmm. mostly just short. That's really the type of player that he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean they mix and match. Well,
they did get rid of Joey Wendell too, so maybe that could be his role this season.
Yeah, I mean he only played 54 games last season after he came up late.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not like he gave his team a lot of reasons to keep him up there.
Mm-hmm.
He had a .211 batting average and a .296 slug, right? Like not a lot of reasons, but you know, his 80 WRC plus is still better than Rougned friggin' Odor. So
oh, no, let's not talk about him again,
but he's got a job. So why not Taylor Walls?
There you go.
Why not Taylor Walls? At least anybody I else? Could use him in fantasy for something.
Yes.
Not Rougned friggin' Odor.
Anybody else in this, these last couple of tiers that you want to talk about? I was surprised. We're going real late on this podcast, but, Amed Rosario, I was surprised at his numbers. I mean, you know, he was always considered a top prospect for the Mets, but now he's a Guardian. I think he has a shot for 15 home runs and 20 stolen bases this season. He was 13 for 13 on stolen bases last season.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Why not? Why not? Like,
he's better than Rougned Odor. No.
He is. So they've got him. The lineup for Cleveland just falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
It is really, I mean, it is Straw, Rosario, J-Ram, Franmil Reyes, and then just a big steaming pile of not what I want for a major league team, right? Bobby Bradley, Stephen Kwan. I don't know who that is. Andres Jimenez, who, you know, was part of the trade with Amed Rosario. They have him batting seventh. Austin Hedges, the catcher, and then Bradley Zimmer, who I keep forgetting is still in the league.
Mm.
And then on the bench is also Sandy Leon, like
3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yu Chang, Owen Miller, and Oscar Mercado. Like this offense is, it's just awful. It is terrible. There's Nolan Jones, who I think is interesting. They have a couple other like infielders that are coming up that are interesting players, a couple top 100 type prospect guys, one outfielder and George Valera. But I mean, this team's offense is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where I struggle because like the counting stats are going to be really hard to come by for everyone not named like Jose Ramirez and Franmil Reyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, then what do you do? And I'm not sure I have the answer to that question. Although it is weird to think that Jose Ramirez is one of the oldest players on this team.
Is he 30 yet?
No.
No? Okay.
Austin Hedges is slightly older in terms of the starting lineup. He's older by a month.
Right.
And he's also older than everyone on the bench except for non-roster invitee Sandy Leon, who's a backup / emergency catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a rebuilding team, folks. They are in that process, and it's going to be a while. But no, I mean, again, Rosario hitting second, if he can just have an okay batting average, plate appearances matter. You know, plate appearances aren't a stat, but they lead to stats.
Yes.
And so I like Miles Straw, if he can get on base decently, Ahmed Rosario could drive him in more than once. There's talent.
There's some speed on this team. Like you mentioned, Mercado could steal some bases.
Yeah.
If he plays. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, who knows about Stephen Kwan? Mm-hmm. It's a mystery to me, right? He's the team's 47th overall prospect.
Mm-hmm.
He had really good numbers in the minors last year.
Okay.
He crushed it. I mean, in double A, he had a 159 WRC plus with a 10% walk rate and a 10% strikeout rate. In triple A, he had an 11.7% walk rate and a 6.7% strikeout rate. And he hit 300 with a 500 slug. I mean, he crushed. I have never heard of him ever. But I guess now I know.
He's a sleeper.
now I've heard of him.
There you go. Yeah, very impressive. I'm looking at his stats. Very impressive, yes.
And, what do you know? This is what a great way to end the show. Alex Chamberlain wrote him up back in October. Who's the first player he compares him to in terms of 270? And again, this is Alex Chamberlain. He wrote this in October about Stephen Kwan. He says he's one of 275 hitters with at least 800 plate appearances since the start of 2019. Kwan boasts the following accolades. He is one of just two hitters with more walks than strikeouts, the other being Isak Paredes of the Tigers.
Oh, wow. You talked him up last week.
Yeah. Love mm-hmm. Isak Paredes. So there it is. That's how we're closing the show.
Talking about a Tiger. Yeah.
On my end. I mean, you can do whatever you're going to do, but I'm finding a way to end it with Isak Paredes every single time somehow. But
well, at least you didn't mention Akil Badu. But
give me a reason. Just friggin' make me, Joe. Hey, yeah.
All right, we were supposed to talk shortstops. We end on the center fielder for the Guardians. I almost called them the other name, which I wonder how many times I'm going to do this season. But great stuff as always, there, Scott. Great talking to you. Thanks for sharing your wisdom about baseball. And that's going to slam the lid on things for today. And we'll be next week. We have to do it, Scott. We have to talk third base, even though we don't want to, right?
Yeah, and I've got to make the hitter list and do all the rankings for all the positions.
Yeah.
So plenty more.
And one of the positions is third base, right? Okay.
Yeah. So this is great prep for something I should have done a week and a half ago.
So our next show should drop next Wednesday, February 23rd. Don't forget to follow me at Joe Galina. Follow Scott at If The Chew Fits. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. If there's anything specific that you'd like us to cover, please reach out to us and let us know. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a nice review. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.